Good evening. Good evening. And welcome to the regularly scheduled November 17th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed the status of unrepresented employees having to do with the adult school teachers. We conferred with our real property negotiators regarding the Froome Road site, and we conferred regarding with our labor negotiators regarding our represented employee groups. We're now in open session. Do we have consensus on the order of business? And I have a couple of changes I'd like to propose. We have a presentation regarding brain injury baseline data that is scheduled after the approval of the minutes and before correspondence. I understand that the folks that will be making that presentation may not be able to join us until 7 o'clock or so. So I would suggest, if it meets with everyone's approval, that we move that to later in the agenda. When we see that they've arrived, we can go ahead and move them in. And then also, it's been suggested that resolution number 5, the day of the special educator, we have a number of people here tonight representing special educators in our district, that be moved up after the public comment and before reports. Are we in agreement on that?
A lot of hardworking teachers here that need to get home and
absolutely. In fact, we could. After public comment and before reports, Mr. Buckman suggests that we do both resolutions, 5 and 6. Everyone in agreement on that? Okay, so that would give us consensus on the order of business. Approval of the minutes. Okay, I will move approval of the minutes of November 3rd as administratively amended. So I have a motion by myself. Oh, okay. So I will move approval then of the minutes of November 3rd.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by myself and a second by Mr. Buckman. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we have 5 ayes and 1 abstention by Mr. Millar, who was absent. Now someone else is going to have to make the motion on November 9th.
I would like to make a motion on November 9th on the corrected minutes for November 9th. Second. Thank you, Kim.
Okay, we have a motion then by Mr. Angel, second by Mr. Millar. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, so we have 5 ayes and 1 abstention by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Okay, we will, at the time the agenda was prepared, no correspondence had been received. So we move on then to public comment. We have no written request for anyone who wishes to speak in public comment. Is there anyone who did not submit a request but would like to address the board? This is your opportunity, and we welcome you. Okay, then, seeing no one, we will move on to resolution number 5. It's number 05-09, 2023-10, the day of the special educator.
I'd like to defer my part of this to Mr. Unger, if I may.
Thank you. And this resolution is to name December 2nd, 2009, as the day of the special educator. The idea of December 3rd, oh my God, I'm looking at December 2nd here. Okay, December 3rd. So I've already blown it. This is an issue that's close to my heart for a couple of reasons. One, of course, is that I'm a special education director, and I have a lot of special education experience, and special education is basically my life from about 7 in the morning till about 6 at night. 9 at night. Whatever my wife says. Who is also a special educator, and that's the other reason that this is an issue that's so close to my heart. Every day, special educators work with our most challenged students. And I think it's only fitting that we recognize the professionals for the job that they do day in and day out, to really give kids the opportunity to succeed. This resolution was the idea of CARS Plus, which is the California Association of Resource Specialists and Other Special Educators. That's the plus side of it. We have, in our school district, we have two statewide representatives from CARS. We have Naomi Blakely, who's the secretary of CARS. And then we have my own dear wife, Elise Unger, who is the Region 8 director. And Region 8 is Santa Cruz, San Benito, San Luis Obispo, Monterey, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. Also, we have just a plethora of special education teachers here. I'm not going to single all of you out and embarrass you, but I did also want to recognize Karen O'Donnell. Where's Karen? Karen, I'm going to embarrass you. Karen is the local president of our CARS chapter. I believe it's STARS. I've heard it STARS or R's or SARS or something like that. But Karen is here, and we wanted to recognize her as well. Looking out into the people that are here, I see speech pathologists, I see resource specialists, I see special day class teachers, I see school psychologists, I see basically everybody who represents and works with our special education students. So with that said, I'd like to call forward Naomi and Elise, and I'd like you just to talk a little bit about what CARS is, what CARS stands for, and how we got to this place where we're honoring special educators, and then we'll go ahead and I would like to go ahead and make the move forward the resolution. I can read the resolution too if you'd like, but at this point, if you guys could just come up and talk a little bit about CARS and why it's so important.
Okay, so CARS, the Organization for Special Educators, came up with the idea of really trying to recognize deliberately instead of incidentally, along with our certificated and classified colleagues throughout the year, the fact that we as special educators really do what we do because we love what we do, and we work very hard to do it. We can't do what we do without all of the support that we receive starting here, with our Gen Ed colleagues, with everybody who is included in the special ed umbrella, our nurses, our paraprofessionals, our psychologists, all of our different kinds of teachers. But CARS Plus did think, you know, it would be appropriate to find one day, and it happens to coincide with the passage of Public Law 94-142, the law for special education. And so we did carry it forth and actually found a legislator so that December 3rd will be recognized statewide as the day of the special educator. I can't remember the legislator's name.
I don't know either, but
Your turn.
Okay. And just a little bit about CARS Plus. We've been in existence for 29 years. I think we're celebrating our 29th anniversary. The organization was built by teachers for teachers. And there's a board of 19, and we all volunteer our time. We meet four times a year, plus we have a convention in San Diego this year, along with yours. And we are we're up at the state level. Sometimes we are the only teachers around at the state level when decisions are being made about special education. So we are 2,000 strong, our membership, and we take from a variety of special educators, mainly teachers, but everybody is involved. So we want to thank you for recognizing the Day of the Special Educator and for supporting us.
It's a fairly lengthy resolution, and I'm not sure if you want to hear me read it. I can go ahead and do that, but I think not, and I think it's just going to stand on its own for recognizing the fine work that you folks do. I would like to make a motion to approve resolution 0509-10.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Buckman. Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Angel?
Absolutely.
Passes 6-0.
Congratulations.
Okay, yes. Just before we move on, I wonder if you would be willing to stand, those of you who are special educators in the room tonight, so that we can show our appreciation.
And I've just been reminded that there are paraprofessionals here. I don't recognize a lot of you, but I do recognize Sandy Meredith, who has worked for us for a number of years at C.L. Smith School. Where's Sandy Meredith? There she is. And other paraprofessionals, too, you might want to get up and be recognized. Sandy is our lone representative of the paraprofessionals who are really out there every single day working one-on-one with our kids. We have two. Where else? Well, stand up for Christ. There you go. Yeah. Wow. And I was just going to say, it's our paraprofessionals who are under the direction of our teachers, working one-on-one with our students and really helping to make sure that the kids are getting the education that they deserve. So thanks to all of you guys.
Thank you very much. So now we'll move on to resolution number 6. It's number 0609-10, the 2010 Census in Schools Week. Dr. Valentine.
Well, I'd like to defer my part of this to Mark Buckman.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine, Madam Chair. I'm really excited that our board went ahead and put this on the agenda. This is an extremely important event that occurs only every 10 years, and it's extremely important to our community. This census will determine federal dollars that come to our community, and it's important that we get as accurate a count as we can, and it affects all levels of the community. It affects the formation of congressional districts, and it affects how the money is distributed in our county among all levels. And so it's very important that every group take part in this, no matter what socioeconomic standard you're at and where you're living, that we are represented and we know what the numbers are. So it's with great honor that I move for approval of this.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Millar. Mrs. Holmes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Angel?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
And that passes 6-0.
Thank you. Is he? Okay. Okay, well, Mr. Uchelson is here. Were you expecting anyone else?
Yes, about 7:45.
Okay, so then we previously decided that we would proceed and go forward with your presentation when you were ready. So moving back up then, we have reports by student representatives. Let's start with Justine Mathias from Pacific Beach High School.
There's not really anything new happening at Pacific Beach, except this week is the end of the second marking period. And so in the third marking period, mock trial is going to start really getting into the case. And most importantly, I'm going to be graduating at the end of this week. I think that's it.
That's a very good report.
Hey, thank you. And now we have Rachel Ayotte from Morro Bay High School.
Hello, my name is Rachel. I'm from Morro Bay. Starting off, Athletic Boosters had casino night on the 7th, which I'm not really sure how that went, seeing as how I'm not legally able to gamble, which is probably a good thing. But I'm sure it was a success. Jostens is on campus. They were on campus today and tomorrow getting orders for our senior cap and gown and tassels and all that fun stuff. And tomorrow we have our senior panoramic picture. I'm planning on wearing something bright so I can stand out, find myself later. And we're also taking club pictures. We have our upcoming fall play. It's called David and Lisa. It's this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 7 p.m. in the cafeteria, $6 with ASB and $7 general admission. Volleyball and cross country went to CIF playoffs, although volleyball lost in the first round. They did well. It was good. FFA is at a Creed contest tonight in Paso, so we'll see how they deal on that. Peer Helping has our food drive going from November, or it just started. It goes till December 11th, so we're going to try to fill those up. The teachers offer extra credit for, you know, some extra oomph to get those in there. And we have a college trip planned for Thursday and Friday, which is still pending approval. They plan on going to Sonoma State, University of Pacific, Sacramento State, UC Berkeley, and UC Davis. So that should be fun. And ASB is going to a leadership conference in Pioneer Valley on Tuesday. We'll get to learn leadership skills and play games and fun stuff like that for our break. So it's pretty exciting. And winter sports are underway, and happy Turkey Day. That's all I have to say. Oh, that's another rhyme.
Okay. For the Ayotte sisters. Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. Congratulations on your impending graduation. We know that you probably would like nothing more than to spend the evening with us.
Of course.
But we're mindful that you have other things that you need to attend to as well. So we thank you for joining us, and you may feel free to leave at any time.
Okay. Thank you.
Have
a good night.
So, reports by school staff and administrators. Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, thank you. At each of your board tables is a Rice Krispie treat that was prepared by Karen O'Donnell's special education class from right here at Los Osos Middle School. They're doing a fundraiser to raise money for the food bank, and this was one of the items that they put on sale and was purchased, and we just wanted to acknowledge the work of Mrs. O'Donnell and her classroom. It's a good project for our kids to get involved in. I have another announcement, if I may. We just completed our selection process for the new director of Buildings, Grounds, and Transportation. And as we know, Brad Parker, who is still in that chair right at the moment, and we're not measuring him for a pine box at the moment, but and will be presenting later tonight. But Brad is going to be retiring at the end of December, and we're very pleased that the new director of Buildings, Grounds, and Transportation has come from within our own ranks, and I'd like Jeff Guy to stand up and just be recognized. Congratulations, Jeff.
Any other staff or administrator reports? Okay. Then we'll move on to educational services update. Dr. Matakovich.
Thank you, Madam President. We have a health H1N1 update. We're in our second week of elementary school clinics. I want to congratulate our nursing staff for the fine coordination they've managed with the county public health department. The clinics are running very smoothly with the health department staff, our parent volunteers, and, of course, our teaching staff guiding our students. We are finishing up our elementary schools by the Thanksgiving break, and we'll start the secondary school clinics the week of December 7th through the winter up to the winter recess. So we're moving right along with that, and it's been we just really appreciate the support we're getting from the public health department. Another announcement, the California Distinguished Schools application process is underway. It's Teach School that's in the works for our school district. We met with Dan Block and his staff in the County Office of Education representatives, and they will be submitting their application by the December 18th timeline. Lots of work to do in a very short time, but we are behind them 100%, and we look forward to a successful application process for this school. Also, Curriculum Council, our meeting is set for November 23rd, and you're all invited if you're looking for something to do on a Monday night, 4 to 7. We've got plenty going on, so you're welcome to attend. What's slated for that evening is an update on our strategic planning process by our superintendent, Dr. Valentine. We'll also be looking at an overview of our proposed new and modified courses. We're going to be discussing our assessment plan, particularly addressing our diagnostic reading assessment results and also our common assessment plan at the secondary level. We're going to be looking at our software evaluation procedures and how they complement our adopted curriculum. And also we're going to receive from the site representatives a response to questions we posed at the last meeting relative to the implementation of our homework policy. So we've got a lot going on at Curriculum Council, and look forward, excuse me?
4 to 7
in B3. And if you'd like to join us, let us know so we can have a place ready for you. And that's it for our division this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Matakovich. Mr. Miller, status of the state budget.
Thank you, Madam President. There still isn't a whole lot going on in Sacramento. Tomorrow, the Legislative Analyst Office will release its report on the state of the state's finances for 09-10 going into 10-11. And then in January, about the 10th, 11th, or 12th, the governor's scheduled to make his mid-year update on the status of the state's budget also. Sometime in between this legislative analyst... Sometime between the legislative analyst report and the governor's proclamation...
You want to give me yours, too?
No, never mind. There'll be significant movement throughout the state of California. I think that the issue that is going to be addressed by the governor, the LAO, is the same budget issue that's being addressed for the last 3 or 4 years. The San Jose Mercury News ran an article in which they report that the state's budget deficit is going to be $25 billion that they're going to have to address in 10-11. The current information coming out of The governor's office has been somewhere between $15 and $20 billion with a recognized deficit of $7.4 billion in 9-10. So the amount of deficit that the state has to address in the last 2 years is going to be in excess of $50 billion. This is going to impact, as the governor says, his proposal will be across-the-board cuts. And what that would mean is that the education budgets would address their fair share, and the corrections would address their fair share, and straight on down the line. So the cuts are going to come from programs, and they're going to be huge again. So we'll wait to see what happens at the state level. Tomorrow's a big day. Watch for the LAO's report. That's going to be very significant because it's a bipartisan report that's being presented. It doesn't have any political agenda to it, supposedly.
Are there any questions for Mr. Miller? I see. Okay, thank you, Mr. Miller. Now, flipping back here. Are we ready? Okay, we have a presentation by Mr. Yukelson and his associate, and perhaps you'll make the introductions, regarding brain injury baseline data, specifically as it regards student-athletes. So please feel free to take the podium.
Good evening, and thank you for having us here. My name is Ron Yukelson. I'm the Associate Administrator at Sierra Vista Regional Medical Center. And this year, we were asked to help expand a program so that we could bring concussion testing to student-athletes throughout the county. And we're currently in seven high schools throughout the county, including Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo High School. All of your student-athletes that are in impact sports have been given a baseline testing as far as concussion testing. I'd like to introduce Mr. Jim Glynn. Jim is the president of San Luis Sports Therapy. We were asked to sponsor this. They're the actual implementers of it. We've collaborated this year on what we think is a very, very important program to address head injuries in our student-athletes here in the county.
Thanks, Ron. Thank you for accommodating my patient care schedule tonight and putting me on at this time. Let me give you a little bit of background. Roughly 300,000 concussive events occur in student-athletes each year, and concussive events have now been termed what we call an MTBI, or a mild traumatic brain injury. And in the past, anyone that has any experience in sports where someone may have had a concussive event, it's often been a series of unknowns where we look at an athlete and, you know, they're kids, they look pretty good, and if they can answer a certain series of questions, in the past we'd send them back to play again. Well, what we've discovered over time through a lot of research, not just in NFL players, but even more so in a younger developing brain, is that the risk of a second injury and or the risk of exertion, both mental or physical, after someone loses consciousness, whether due to sport or otherwise, can have some significant sequelae long term. And so what's happened over time is that the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, as well as UCLA Sports Concussion Institute, worked with a group called IMPACT. And IMPACT is a baseline test. And the whole idea is that we take these athletes before something happens where they have a concussive event, and we test them. And this test consists of six pieces, which are attention span, working memory, response variability, sustained and selective attention time, nonverbal problem-solving reaction time. It's an internet test. They sit down at a computer and they spend about 20 or 30 minutes doing this testing. Well, so far this year through the testing, we've found it to be very useful now that we've expanded it to the seven high schools. All seven schools have had a student athlete have a concussive event, and all seven schools have had at least one athlete experience some sort of a post-concussion syndrome. These can be headaches, difficulty concentrating. The reality of these things is that, again, in the past we had no idea when these individuals that had suffered a concussion were back to a stage where they should be able to do things again, whether it's football, whether it's doing their studies, whether it's exerting themselves through elevating their heart rate. What we have now is that in these student athletes that have been tested, we have the ability to go back, use their baseline, and retest them and see what their recovery's been like. And remember, in a developing brain, this is a big deal. In an adult brain, you know, still a big deal, but not as big a deal in these flexible brains that are that still have this plasticity. What's been very interesting is this year we've had two, and I just heard of a third event today that I can't verify, but two incidents where were non-athletes. In both cases that I know of, there were two skateboarders that also occurred and had concussive events with some significant sequelae. Unfortunately, they weren't baseline tested, but we also have a national norms where we can go back and compare them to national norms. And in both cases, it's been noted that they were very helpful to have those tests in place. We just had an athlete referred to a local neurologist after a concussion, and because the screen wasn't the follow-up screen wasn't coming out the way that was expected, they were sent to the neurologist, and thankfully a very early diagnosis of a seizure disorder was discovered, and so this individual is going to be able to get treatment earlier. You know, the whole idea is to benefit these people both in terms of safety, both pre and post injury. We expect to continue to roll this program out to more high schools and possibly even junior high. Junior high is when you can first start to test kids. It's usually seventh grade. The tests are done every 2 years. They're valid for 2 years. And again, the reality is we hope we never have to use them. Unfortunately, though, each year that we've done this now, this is our third year, second rolling it out to all seven of the schools that we're in, and we've been very pleased with having this test available. And we wanted to bring this to your attention so you knew a little bit more about it in case questions came your way. We're also very proud of what we're able to do with the test. There should be another article coming out in the Tribune real soon about the benefits of it and how it's been used. And so, again, I just wanted to thank you for your time to be able to tell you a little bit about it. And if any of you had any questions, I'd be happy to field those.
Mr. Unger. So you do the baseline testing as a computer program. I've taken one of those, you know, as an older person, and right, to see the decline, as I know. How though do you retest the students on the sidelines?
So the student, if a student athlete incurs a concussive event, there is no testing done on the sideline. A concussive event is an immediate disqualification from continued play. So they're pulled from play and treated through a protocol where it's been pre-established. They go through that protocol and then are retested after they've been able to see the appropriate physicians.
And how do you determine what a concussive event looks like, say, on the football field?
So on a football field, it's typically a loss of consciousness, although there are several other things that may take place if there isn't loss of consciousness. There are a series of tests, serial sevens, which is one of the big tests that you use, is literally having the student count backwards from 100 by 7, so 100, 93. I'd continue on, but I may show that I've had an event earlier today. There are a series of events, cognizant of time and place, where they are. Concussions, if any of you have ever been involved in someone that's had a concussion, it's a very interesting, for lack of a maybe more appropriate word, but there are some very consistent responses or consistent lousy responses to some of these questions. But yeah, it's all very protocol-driven, based on protocol from the National Athletic Trainers Association.
Okay. Mr. Buckman.
Yeah. I just want to get this right with the microphone. As we look at this, and I'm assuming this is because we have the football in an enclosed place, we can look at it on a regular basis. But we have a lot of youth sports that are younger. Is there a national database that's being developed for youth soccer and youth football?
Yeah, right now we're testing football, soccer, baseball. But candidly, from what we've seen, it's really the skateboarders that we probably need to get out there and test. This is where we have a surprisingly high incidence of concussion. We can start as early as junior high, and the direct answer to your question, there is a national database. It gets bigger every year. There are several states in the Midwest that are requiring these tests be done across the board in all of the high schools, Indiana being one that comes to mind. But there is a national database. It will get larger as the test continues to grow, and they're able to now break it up by ages as well. So, yeah, there is a national database. It's not as accurate. It would be like comparing any of us to a national database. It's always much more beneficial if we can test each specific athlete because reaction time may be faster in one athlete than another. And the whole idea is to compare them to themselves so they can go back. But it has been useful, in like I said, with both of the skateboarders as well as this more recent athlete that was also suffered an injury that was not a skateboarder. But there is a database.
Thanks.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Having suffered a self-inflicted concussive event with a surfboard, I have a lot of sympathy for kids who experience that, even though I wasn't a kid at the time. I saw a piece on a new football helmet that's being experimented with. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, there are two. There are two being worked on right now. There was a former college football player went to med school, came back from med school, and is working on a new system that uses a series of springs within the helmet. And that helmet, as well as a helmet by Riddell that has some sensors in it, so they can actually determine, now that accelerometers, because of, I assume, video games, have gotten so small, they're beginning to look at implanting these in the helmets as well, so they can see the force of the event that occurred. There's some discussion that that may not be as valuable as everyone thinks it'll be, because while it may take a whole lot of injury to hit my thick skull and cause a concussion, somebody else, it may not take as much force. But the technology in the helmets will continue to improve and probably continue to integrate with some of this testing, so they can look and see how much force occurred, how severe was this injury, and see where that goes. But the most exciting thing is this former football player that went to med school, I believe is a neurologist, that is developing a series of springs where it actually supports the head rather than just cushions it.
But there's a limit to what we can do with that because of the contra coup types of injuries.
I mean, our brains literally sit in a you know, they're in a fluid situation, and when it gets thrown hard enough, you run into that that situation where it'll actually push back against your own skull.
And it sounds as if you have a fairly good comfort level with how the protocols are being applied during our interscholastic sporting event. So is that a fair assessment?
Yes.
That's reassuring. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Angel.
Is this a fairly expensive test to administer, or
you know,
what's the cost?
The biggest expense is getting a room full of high school students in one place and having them be quiet enough to do the test. It's not an expensive. It's roughly $500 per high school for 200 baseline tests, which then also gives some follow-up tests. You would never use as many follow-up tests, and there is a fee for some of the follow-up tests that we've been absorbing as an organization, somewhere between $10 and $25. It's a tiered scale. It's truly one of these things where the internet provides scale that it really allows this to be done at a level that's probably criminal to not have in place. You know, for $500 to protect a student's brain, you know, I have two daughters, and when they're in junior high, I look forward to making sure that they're tested regardless of what sport they're in.
So then, as a governing body, and this is a question for staff, is this something we can do as, say, like a healthy kid survey for all our seventh graders, or is that feasible?
Well, I had the question as to San Luis High School and Morro Bay High School do this right now. Is that something that the school has paid, or has it been subscribed to by the – it is something the schools have paid?
Yeah. We've been fortunate enough to have Sierra Vista partner with San Luis Sports Therapy, and so this first year where we've rolled it out in seven schools, between the two of us, we've shared the cost of it for the high schools. The high schools do share we pay part of the fee for the athletic trainers to be at the schools, and the high schools do share some of that fee with us.
Yeah, I think it's something to take seriously.
Mr. Unger?
So our first bike riders.
Is there any movement to take this to CIF and get something like this a CIF requirement?
Yeah, early stages, when it was first introduced to me, came from an individual named Tony Strickland. And Tony's the head of the Sports Concussion Institute, which is associated with UCLA. They were doing a large-scale test with CIF. CIF was funding a project with the Sports Concussion Institute, and for reasons that I'm not sure about, that project's been delayed, and so the results have not come out. But CIF is aware of it, and they've looked to study it in the Southern California region, down in the Los Angeles area region with the Sports Concussion Institute. So they're aware of the testing. They know of other states that have the testing mandatory throughout the various states. So I just don't know what the status of rolling that out or making it mandatory across the board is.
We may have an opportunity to meet some folks from CIF in a couple of weeks. Would it be worthwhile for us to mention this to them and talk about how it's been helpful for our county?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, anything we can do to continue to get more information about the status of how are we going to use this to continue to protect the student athletes, I think would be very appropriate.
Okay, Okay, and then my question, I don't know if it's really directed to you, to staff, but I'm wondering if our students who participate in contact sports are required to do this testing as a condition of participation by their coaches? Does anyone know?
I am presuming it is not a condition of participating at this point, and I'm assuming that given that agreement to take the test is voluntary on the part of the kids that do it.
Yeah, they're voluntary tests that Sierra Vista and our organization are providing now. I think there have been cases where we've actually had students come back that weren't available the day we were doing the test, and we're more than happy to test them. It's one of these simple things. It's not complicated, so we can bring them back and do it. It is more efficiently done in the computer labs at the schools where you can get these done in groups, but no, it is a voluntary test now. Strongly encouraged, though.
Okay, so if you have any print matter related to this that you can make available to Dr. Valentine's office, then when we do encounter the CIF people, we may have
sure.
Something more to give them than just
our
verbal.
Yeah, we'd be happy to send the protocols and some of the other pieces of information over.
Okay, thank you so much for the
thank
presentation.
Thank you for your time tonight. Appreciate it.
I appreciate your coming. Okay, we're hopping around a bit here. Item 4 is a public hearing, proposed agreement with California School Employees Association, Chapter 89. The public hearing is, hello, Mr.
Well,
Robinette.
No, it's, you can bang the gavel. We have reached agreement between the Board of Education and the California School Employees Association, Chapter 89, and by law, you need to have a public hearing. The item itself will appear later in the action consent agenda.
Okay, so I will open the public hearing regarding the proposed agreement with the California School Employees Association, Chapter 89. Is there anyone in the public that wishes to speak to this? Seeing no one, then I'll close the public hearing. Done the resolutions. Moving on to action discussion, item 7, solar project environmental determination. Mr. Parker.
Good evening. As we shared with the board previously, one of the requirements for solar electric production is the reduction of shading. And now that we have what appear to be virtually the final site designs, we're able to accurately assess the shading potential for various trees and what tree trimming and tree removal would be required. That information, along with the proposed mitigation, is included in tonight's packet. And you'll notice that the plant material has been selected, the locations have been identified, and we think that it's been fairly accurately and carefully considered. Tonight, I have Mr. Foote, David Foote from the Firma Company, who was our environmental consultant on this project. He'll talk a little bit about how we arrived at the environmental determination, but in summary, we're going to ask the board to take lead agency status.
Years ago, we worked on a variety of CEQA determinations, that's the California Environmental Quality Act, for the school district during the Measure A improvements, and as a result, we have a pretty good knowledge of all of the campuses that are going to be affected by the photovoltaic project. When Brad brought this to us, he asked us what we need to do to comply with the California Environmental Quality Act. And we went through a series of tests or steps prescribed by law to determine what needed to be done. And the first one was determine if the school district was, in fact, the lead agency under CEQA. In other words, the lead agency is the one that prepares the environmental determination and carries forward that. The school district definitely qualified for that as the agency that has the primary responsibility for approving and carrying forth the project. So establishing lead agency is important, and we think that that has been done correctly. That doesn't mean that you don't have to get a couple of permits. It simply means that you can take action on the CEQA document. Because the California Coastal Act creates local coastal plans, both the county and the city of Morro Bay, in implementing that, can take superior status on permitting. So while often the school district gives themselves a permit, in other words, they're a state agency, In the case of those two jurisdictions, the county, which would be the Los Osos schools, and Morro Bay, there are permits that the district will have to get. What's before you tonight is not those permits, it is the CEQA determination. And that leads to the next step. As prescribed by your local guidelines for implementing CEQA, we conducted a preliminary environmental assessment and filled out the exemption form. And basically what that consisted of was looking at each site, what was being proposed, looking at the photo documentation provided by your photovoltaic consultant, and determining in consultation with previous documents prepared for the different schools whether or not there was a likelihood of a significant environmental effect. And we identified a few areas that the project needed to be modified in order to make sure there was no environmental effect. And so in so doing, the project becomes a project that has a less than significant effect on the environment. I need to mention kind of a little bit of the legal setting on this, and this may have come up before, but in talking about permits and who gets to decide what, it's important to mention California solar access laws. And in 1978, a law was passed called the Solar Rights Act, and that was amended as recently as 2005, and it basically restricts local authorities, and that would be like the county or the city of Morro Bay, on what they can require you to do or not do when you want to put up solar panels. It basically limits them to only applying restrictions related to health and safety, and it specifically excludes things like visual effects. And so that was another important finding to make, that in any case, we didn't have to necessarily focus on those aspects, although we did consider those in our assessment. So what you have in your packet tonight, then, is a project description that's or summary and identified measures to avoid any impact. Another one would be here at this campus, there are some known potential cultural resources, archaeological sites. Primarily, they're very disturbed, but they could be unearthed while you're digging a hole for a panel or the framework that holds it up. And so an archaeological monitor would need to be present. So those are the sorts of things that we've incorporated into the project to avoid any impact on the environment. So once we were comfortable that the project didn't have a high likelihood of creating a significant impact, we then looked at the criteria for categorical exemptions. And basically what that is under CEQA is if you qualify for any number of listed exemptions, it simply means that you're categorically exempt by law. You don't have to proceed any further with a CEQA determination that could, in some cases, culminate in an environmental impact report, something like that. So we identified three that you have in your documents tonight that we believe that this project would fall under: a Class 2C, which is replacement or reconstruction of utility systems, existing utility systems that don't involve a significant increase in capacity. And obviously, you're simply trading one source of power with another. The Class 3A is construction of or conversion of small structures. This is a pertinent structures, including, among other things, carports. And we looked at the scale of what these arrays are going to be, the structures that are going to support these as like a carport structure. In fact, they will be like a carport structure in some of the parking lots. So we looked at that and interpreted that as saying this scale of project, the scale of improvement, was intended to be exempt. And then the third one is minor additions to schools, and this constitutes improvements to schools, changes or additions that don't increase capacity beyond 25% or 10 classrooms. And this particular exemption, I believe, was created to give school districts who are in the business of educating a little bit of a less cumbersome and less burdensome process to make minor modifications to their campuses as needs be and not have to undergo CEQA review on everything that they do. So that, in summary, is how we got where we are tonight, to present you with the notice of exemption that, if you direct staff and approve this tonight, would be filed with the county clerk, and then the project can move forward through the next steps. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Mr. Millar?
So when the board approves us being a lead agency, when we take that step of filing with the county, that actually does make us the lead agency because we're taking the first.
Yes, that's right. It kind of does. Yeah.
I read the stuff.
Yeah.
Also, I have a question. It probably Brad might be better. It's on the Monarch Grove site. What was the prior mitigation plannings? Was that related to the leach field and?
Monarch Grove prior mitigation plannings were for the monarch butterfly, because when we built that school, we had removed some of their habitat, and so we replaced it with prior plantings.
Thank you. That's all the questions I have. Excellent staff work. Appreciate it.
Okay. Anyone else? Thank you very much for your presence.
Staff has been working with a number of agencies and a developer concerning the realignment of our property on Froom Ranch Road and Los Osos Valley Road in order to accommodate a realignment of Froom Ranch Road so that it can better accommodate the traffic that's going to be created from the development of the Irish Hills Plaza East, which is going to be on the east northeast corner of Los Osos Valley Parkway and Froom Ranch. So it'll be across the street from the Home Depot there. And our property is the current adjoining sections of Pacific Beach High School, just to align everybody. What is needed from us in order to make the roadway work for the traffic and safety engineers from the city is about 4,935 square feet along the eastern edge of the property as it would come onto Froom Ranch. The district did a appraisal of that property, and the value of that 4,935 square feet turned out to be $132,000. That represents about $26.75 a square foot. In our negotiations with Irish Hills Plaza East, we have resolved a number of issues and come up with the following conditions of agreement for the dedication of that 4,935 square feet. Irish Hills will perform all street improvements along Froom Ranch Road at no cost to the district. This is basically street curbs, gutters, lights, anything that has to do with street improvements. The estimated value of that is near $250,000. Irish Hills will pay the district $5,000 for costs incurred for legal and appraisal services. Irish Hills will grant a driveway easement to the district property fronting on Froom Ranch Road so that we can have access from Froom Ranch into our property and out of our property at some point in the future should we decide to develop it. The City of San Luis Obispo will execute a memorandum of understanding that grants the district a left turn lane from Froom Ranch Road onto our property via the above easement. And essentially, that is just going to be an underlying agreement that when we go to develop our property, we will have the right to have a left turn lane constructed in the middle of Froom Ranch Road so that it will access our property. And finally, the Irish Hills will pay the district $75,000 in cash. Staff recommends the Board of Education to approve the conditions of this dedication.
Mr. Millar?
I'll move approval of the above conditions for the property dedication.
Okay. And Mr. Buckman? Okay. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Buckman. Question, Mr. Unger?
Yes. One question, Mr. Miller. The property was appraised at $132,000, and we're getting about $75,000 in cash. There's a pretty significant difference in there. Could you explain to me and the public why this is something that we should go forward and approve and what the cost benefit to the district would be, please?
The essential cost benefit is that we won't have to pay property to be considered for anything in the future. This is an opportunity for us to have these significant costs absorbed by somebody else. You can argue whether the $250,000 is accurate because it wasn't a very scientific assessment, but it is a substantial amount of money. It would be somewhere between $200,000 and $300,000 easily for that significant piece of road that will now be improved. That's a huge cost savings. We also get the value of an access onto this piece of property, which, remember its location. It's on a commercial development along Los Osos Valley Road, on a corner that's going to have Costco, Home Depot, and this very large commercial development. So our corner, the fourth corner of these three, is a significant value to us at some point in the future. Maybe we do something with it, maybe we don't. But by having our neighbors being those three developments, we have a cost there. We're going to get out of that an access into that property. Not only do we have it on the frontage road of Los Osos Valley Road, but now we're going to have also Froom Ranch Road. And the city's long-term idea, and it's hard to call it a plan yet, but idea for Froom Ranch Road is to go all the way through to Madonna Road. So it would connect up the Madonna Plaza and anything that might happen with the Delidio project and eventually Irish Hills. So it has a significant amount of impact for commercial. We have a left turn lane there. And we also are going to have access into our property off this easement. And we get $75,000 cash. So I think if you added it all up, it would be in the neighborhood of $300,000, $350,000 worth of improvements in cash for a $132,000 piece of property, which is only 5,000 square feet.
Okay. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Buckman. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, so that passes unanimously. Okay, moving on to the action consent agenda, please let me know if there's anything that you would like to be pulled. Item 9, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 10, approval of agreement with California School Employee Association, Chapter 89.
Pull.
Item 11, acceptance of donations. 12, disposition of surplus property.
Pull, please.
Item 13, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Item 14, approval of purchase orders.
Move approval of 9, 11, 13, and 14.
And I'll second that. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. That passes unanimously. So item 10, approval of agreement with California School Employee Association, Chapter 89. Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers.
I just want to take this opportunity to acknowledge the work of CSEA and their participation in interest-based bargaining, and the efforts that they went to consider the needs of all of their members and hold their interests up against the economic realities that we're facing.
Companies, and would they not just replace this, or is this just one of those Lone Rangers?
This is one of those copy machines that we owned for years and years and years and was so outdated they wouldn't even take it on a service contract and no longer is serviceable.
I move approval of item 12, please.
Moved by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mr. Millar. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. So then we move on to advance agenda. Does anyone care to bring an item up for advance agenda? Okay, seeing no one. Oh, I'm okay.
Oh, he's got a 45-minute report, though.
Reports by board members.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. I had the opportunity this week, or actually late last week, to attend the Children's Services Network, San Luis Child Abuse Prevention Networking meeting, where the first rollout of the Truancy Task Force was presented. The Truancy Task Force was formed in January and has completed their work. It was a phenomenal presentation. And I'm hoping that we'll see more of it. Secondly, last night I was able to attend the countywide PTA meeting at the County Office of Education, where our friend Frank Warren from Friday Night Live gave a presentation that was phenomenal Most of the PTA units, I think, in the county are going to ask to have their presentation at their school sites. And it was about drug and alcohol use, and a lot of eyes were opened up, and a lot of it was based on the results of the California Healthy Kids Survey. So it was two nice events that I got to attend.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Mr. Unger, did you have a report?
I did. I was able to attend the Latino Literacy Project graduation last week, and hopefully everybody saw that in the newspaper. It was, as always, quite touching. I especially like to recognize the three teachers that were involved, Evelyn Frame, Rob Banfield, and Brooke Sigler. It's a cooperative effort between Monarch Grove and Baywood Elementary Schools. There were a number of folks that graduated. There was a large potluck beforehand, and Mr. Banfield brought out his mannequin, and he had quite a bit to say in both English and Spanish. If you haven't ever seen it, it's well worth it. Just to encourage our families to participate in whatever literacy projects are available for them, and good reading starts at home. And so I just wanted to congratulate these people and thank them.
Excellent. Any other reports? Okay. Seeing none, then, we stand adjourned.
Record set.